organizational commitment, a feeling of attaching resources of an employee to the organization and identifying the mind and the intellect of within organization. When you stay in an organization for some time, there automatically comes an organization commitment if you are satisfied with the job. If I have job satisfaction and all those things which we explained some time back, organization commitment automatically comes. I feel I'm a part of the organization. The organization and me are identified with each other. I'm very proud to say that the organization to which I'm doing this, I feel committed to them. It's a fantastic commitment. It's nice to be a part of it. It's a good culture where I'm working and I'm feeling a lot of enhancement with me. Morale. Morale is slightly different from motivation. Morale is something which I choose to do regardless of the situation around. It's just that I choose to be into high energy. I choose to be positive. That's morale. I know I have to cross a mountain. I know I have to do a very arduous trek. But my morale is very high. And if you know, all army training, commando training is all about raising the morale. Conditions are very tough. But the conditions do not affect my inner state. My inner state is my choice. In motivation, it's slightly different. We'll cover motivation in one of the later chapters. Motivation is usually conditional. It's got a purpose. If you give me 1,000 rupees, I'll do this job, I'll feel motivated. But in morale, whether you give me 1,000 or not, it's coming from within me, I'm going to do it. And that's morale. It's a state of mind with regard to various aspects of a job and the willingness, underlying willingness, to work to attain individual and organization objectives. It's morale that makes leaders, not motivation. In my experience as a trainer, as a leadership trainer, I've seen people with high morale, they rise to become leaders. Morale is within you. Morale is within you. Right? Now we talk about the most tricky part of human beings' emotions, moods and emotional intelligence. Two words are there, emotions and feelings. How I demarcate them? Feelings are within me. When I express it out, it becomes an emotion. So emotions are externalized feelings that are directed at someone or something or some concept. Emotions are reactions to an action and the consequences of an event. Somebody tells me something, it's an action. So I react with an emotion. I feel good about it or I don't feel good about it and I express it. Emotions are expressive. Feelings are not expressive. They are inside you. They are accompanied by signals through body language and action. I may not express my emotion in so many words. I may not say, I'm happy with you. Feel the joy and say that to you. I may keep a poker face. In formal situations, in formal setups, people do not normally express their emotions. But if you train yourself to read people, you can see them, see through the body language and actions. To put it in a very humorous way, in all the appraisals which some of you you're attending, the appraiser is sitting with a poker face and he tells you many, 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 many things. And people come and tell me, he told me that I'm no more required in the project team. He told me that I'm no more required in the company. And when he said that, he was absolute. I couldn't make out that I'm getting sacked or I'm getting removed from this team. So there are people who express, but you can't read their expression. So one of the trainings, one of the inputs as a behavioral student is to try and understand that the body language and the actions actually express emotions of people. And you must learn this is a trick, this is a talent, this is a skill one has to develop. It comes to coaching, training, being with people, calibrating yourself, etc. And they are cognitive in nature. Cognitive means it's all about you making a mental map of meaningfulness. You making a mental map of meaningfulness. Emotions are nothing but my languaging about a situation by making it into a mental map. I'm giving you a video lecture right now. This video lecture, I can have a cognitive map which says that, oh my God, how long this lecture is going to last? So how many more slides are there? If I have that cognitive map, my emotion towards the lecture will not be the way it is right now. Instead, I choose to language because I love the job to say that, wow, this is amazing, my favorite subject, I like to teach, I like to talk a lot about it, and you can see me talking a lot about this subject, and so my emotions towards you, I'm sure you feel it, it's very, very positive, it's a giveaway, right? So it's cognitive in nature. The moment I change my cognition, my emotion towards a particular situation will change. So what is in your hands? Your cognition. You must choose. That's why I said attitude is an internal choice. It's my choice. Since attitude is a choice, a behavior is also a choice. A behavior is a choice. It's my choice. Okay? Moods. Moods are feelings that tend to be less intense than emotions and may lack contextual stimulus. Lots of words. A mood is very temporary. I'm not in a mood. Something, you know, a mood according to me is a pause. A mood is a pause between two emotions. Emotion E1 and E2, there's a pause. In bed, there's suddenly a mood comes in. Either you may get hyper or you may feel low or you may just do nothing. A mood is a very temporary position in a feeling. And this does not have any contextual stimulus. I don't know why, but I'm not feeling up to the mark. A mood that comes sometimes. And they are not a consequence of actions or events. They are often caused by general or unclear factors. This is very disastrous. Suddenly you're not in a mood. Why? Because your clarity is lost. A person becomes moody when the clarity is lost, either temporarily or permanently. When it is permanently lost, clarity, then you become terribly moody all the times. So there will be fluctuation. You will be in a low mood in the morning. Again for 1 or 2 hours you will be focused. Again the mood will go down. I come across many such people around me. And when I wonder, I keep telling them, come on, stay focused. When you do not have a goal in life, all these things happen, by the way. When life matters, only when you have a goal. You may have mood swings. We all go through mood swings. But you must be able to quickly come out of it. That comes only through self-awareness. And moods can destroy the productivity of an organization. Moods can destroy the job function. So whenever you're not having a good mood, just pause for a few seconds, take a break, go around, take a walk and come back, and then you're back into the mood because you lose focus. Remember one thing, the brain has got a limited capacity to absorb. Beyond a point when it stops absorbing, you start wavering. So you must know your capacity that this is where I am, so take a break. It is stupid, foolish to keep on working incessantly like some people do and then get into breakdowns. They get into breakdowns. I mean, I still wonder, you know, why people are killing themselves by doing this so-called, you know, work for 12 hours, 14 hours continuously. Are they really working for 12 hours, 14 hours? And if they do, they are victims of moods and emotions of this nature. It affects them personally, their health, and also the people around them socially, at home and other places. Okay? That's an observation, not a comment for or against. These are some types of emotions that have been put in the chart. Anger, sadness, embarrassment, disgust, happiness, contentment, hate, surprise, enthusiasm, love, affection, frustration, pride, desire, disappointment, fear, joy, jealousy. We are all part of this. Some of us have some of these in large proportions and some of us have some in lower proportion. So you can take a checklist which of them are more in you and you know where you stand in life. Aspects of emotions. Biology of emotions. Limbic system. The brain has got parts. There's a limbic part of your brain. Okay. It takes care of, it's a source of emotions. So the limbic part of the brain is a seat from where the emotions emerge. Active and inactive limbic systems cross variations in emotions. If you say something to me and my limbic system is active, I'll be into an emotion of that. But if I'm blankly staring at you and you're saying something, my limbic system is perhaps sleeping, so I may not emotionally react to you. Women are seen to experience more emotions than men. Now this is again a statement coming from the past. Now it's not that the genders are having this or that. Basically, It's about the way I am aware of myself and I use my brain. Well, they go through certain biological changes. Women, as they are growing up, you know, they have some changes in terms of their hormones and other things. So there is a connection between hormonal changes and emotional upheavals and depressions. It does happen, but I wouldn't like to say that women are seen to experience more emotion than men. It's both ways. I wouldn't like to give a gender bias because biologically we are endowed with the same emotional base. But for the roles that we play, man plays one role and a woman plays another role. There could be a certain manifestation of emotion which is slightly different. But the base is the same. Intensity. People express different emotions for the same stimuli as their personality factors influence the process of generation of emotions. Stimulus is a singular. Stimulus is something which I tell you, which I give you. Something that affects, that is put in front of your five sensory organs is a stimulus. Something that is put in front of your five sensory organs is a stimulus. There's a plate of food, aromatic food, something like a pav bhaji. It's got a lot of greenery on the top. It's got a lot of vats of butter. It's aromatic. Now that is creating an intensity of emotion to a foodie. He'll feel wow, his mouth will start watering. But for somebody else, food is not a big value. I just look at it, it's okay. So the intensity is less. So the same stimulus will be differently seen by both the people. People express different emotions for the same stimulus. It can be singular or plural, right? So the same substance would have a different impact of emotion on A as different from B, as different from C, right? Frequency and duration. Sometimes a person's personality factors. Now this is something interesting. Each one of us is having a personality, which I'll be discussing in one of the chapters. The personality means it's a mental makeup plus physical makeup, both put together. Internal and external factors put together forms your personality. And each one of us adopts a certain personality for living. So these personality factors, they do not match the situation demands in certain people. This mismatch affects frequency and duration of emotions felt. If I'm taking up a task and it doesn't match my personality, then what happens is my emotions go up and down, up and down, up and down. I was involved, I was engaged in a company some time back when I was working as an engineer. And in that organization, the situation demands did not match my personality. And I was doing a good job. I was really performing extremely well, top performer. But inside me, there was a lot of swing of emotions and I was really going through. And as a result, I faced health issues, traveling a lot. The demands are not as I expected. And there were lots of things, holding a senior position. So there I noticed that this was creating a trouble. So the moment it did this, I quit. And I took a break and I went into the next job. Rationality of emotions. Sometimes emotion expression or non-expression of emotions may lead to misunderstanding of or undermining credibility. This is a very important thing. Hence people rationalize their emotions. Now remember one thing. Many of us feel that expressing emotion is not proper. And unfortunately, organizations have traditionally, not now, traditionally organizations have started giving this too much of weightage. Don't express your emotions, don't shout, don't scream, don't say anything. Yeah, as a social grace, you're not supposed to do certain things. But expressing emotion is as important as communicating your words. And today, fortunately, organizations are encouraging you to express your emotions. In society, unfortunately, and also in homes, some people choose not to express their emotions and that results in illness. 99% of illnesses, a research has started sort of given a report saying that they are because of emotions which are locked up and unexpressed. Emotions need a release. It's like a pressure cooker which needs a steam release. It's important. And then people give a logic to their emotion. You know why I'm depressed? Because of this is the reason. Your emotion is your languaging towards the situation. Then what you do is you justify. When I justify my emotions, I chose to be with the emotions because it gives me identity. There are people who come to me, they want to get coached on behavior, and then when I start addressing it, they love to be in that misery into which they are, because they love it and they rationalize it. I said, Venkat, you do not know what I go through. I said, yeah, I do not know. Agreed. Can I know? They are way out from depression. Are you feeling happy, feeling depressed? Are you feeling happy not being able to get sleep at night? No. Then who is responsible? No, so-and-so did this, so-and-so did that. People say this very often. Ultimately, there are pathways to the release of your emotions. There are pathways for you to come out and express your emotions, because you owe it to yourself. Every individual owes it to himself and herself to lead a healthy emotional and physical life. And if you don't express your emotions, you'll start justifying it. This is what many people are doing. It is one area which has got a huge amount of focus today in coaching and training. People are able to achieve huge things, you know, turnovers, launching new products, coming out with new technologies. But when it comes to this technology of human brain and human emotions, people are absolutely illiterate, I would say. They are not able to handle it. Functions of emotions. Emotions perform critical functions in decision making, interpersonal relationships and personality development. How true. Emotions and feelings are functions of the mind and the thinking of the and mind and thinking is a function of the brain. Emotions and feelings are functions of the mind. The way I language incidents, the way I language stimuli, and thinking is a function of the brain. For meaningful and effective decision making, one should use the interaction of the mind and the brain. Let me put a different perspective. Left brain is logic and right brain is emotion. Any decision should be a combination of these two things. Logic takes you towards the results. Emotion adds the human flavor and the human acceptability to the results. Both are important. Both are very important. Sources of emotions and moods. One's personality affects one's emotions and moods. Personality traits influence emotions. A social gathering will invoke different emotions in a reserved person and an outgoing person. A reserved person will go and sit in a corner, he'll say, I want to go home. An outgoing person will say, let the party go on. Gender. Women experience and express more emotions in a greater degree than men, and women are more sensitive than men. This again, because the role people play, the role that a lady has to play biologically, you know, playing the role not socially as a mother, nurturing the kids, etc. So if she doesn't express, she won't be able to play the role well. So they are more expressive. Of course, they express in different ways. Sources of emotion and moods continuing further age. Now this again, I would not totally slot it because age has got nothing to do with it. But the book says, let's read it. People between the ages 18 and 24 tend to experience less negative emotions and have positive emotions for longer periods. It's possible that a person between this age of 18 and 24 has gone through a negative home experience. So he may be negative also. So this is by and large. Stress. People experience different emotions under stressful situations. Two types of stress we talk about. Distress and eustress. Eustress is a stress that you get when you're about to start something. You're about to go and give a speech. At that time there are butterflies in your stomach. You start feeling little tense. But once you start speaking, the stress is gone. That stress is positive, is healthy. It is called as eustress. But if the stress keeps continuing while you're talking, then that becomes what is called a distress. That is negative. Sleep. People with less than normal sleep of 8 hours tend to experience negative emotions. A lot of people are into sleep deprivation. Asleep and emotion is directly connected. There's no doubt about it. Irritability in behavior coming out of emotions not being properly aligned is because of sleep. Because when the sleep happens, your mind goes to a rest, your body goes to a rest, and then you're getting a state of regeneration. It's very important. Social activities. In social activities and gatherings, people usually experience positive emotions and like to share their good mood. Not necessarily, usually, but not always. Weather affects emotions. Yes, for many people. For example, some people feel positive with heat, while others may feel negative with heat. Winter, some people feel fantastic, some people say winter is horrible. And they change their mood, they start feeling otherwise in emotions. Changes in weather also have an impact on the people. Climate is happening over a period of time. Weather happens on a daily basis, on an hourly basis. That also brings about mood swings in certain people. Physical exercise, yoga and meditation, they tend to relax the mind and the body and enable people to experience positive emotions and moods. Overload versus relaxation. Overload of work causes negative emotions and relaxation causes positive emotions. It could be the other way around also for some people. Now we come to what is called as emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence. What is emotional intelligence? It's the intelligence of understanding your emotions through experience and the emotions of others. It's the intelligence of understanding emotions of yours through experience, not by staying away, and the emotion of others. It can be defined as a capacity to recognize our own feelings and of others and managing emotions in a social and organizational interaction. Managing, underline. Whenever there's an emotional upset going on with a group of people, what do normal people do? They run away. If you run away, you will never be able to learn emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence is basically an experiential path. It's experiential in terms of form and content. If I want to develop emotional intelligence, I must be in the cloud of emotions. Learn to handle it and come out of it. This term came in because of the path-breaking book written by this gentleman called Daniel Goleman, Emotional Intelligence. And there's a training also associated with that. How to become emotionally intelligent. Every job requires a good degree of emotional intelligence and is a key determinant in career growth. Emotional intelligence means when there is something happening and my emotion is not accepting it, I start feeling upset. So emotional intelligence tells you, understand yourself, why you're upset, and it tells you, how do you language the situation differently? So at the time of doing it, you are going through a challenging time, no doubt. But when you do it once, twice, thrice, when you do it again and again, you start developing what is called as an emotional intelligence towards a job. And this is very important. What separates managers from leaders? Emotional intelligence. Leaders are emotionally intelligent. They know to handle all different types of situation because they are able to conquer their own emotions and the emotions of others. That's very important. Why is it that some people do not get promoted to higher levels of functioning? One of the key factors is lack of emotional intelligence. They can't handle pressure. They get upset. They become angry. They throw up. They do many things. All that is coming because they have chosen to be like that within them cognitively. For star performers, emotional intelligence matters more than technical and analytical skills. When you're going higher up in the ladder or when you're dealing with people, any person who's dealing with people from public relations, from marketing, from training, or a leader in an organization, he needs to be emotionally very intelligent. Is emotional intelligence all about conquering intelligence? Certainly not. Emotional intelligence is all about understanding that every human being has an emotion, including you. Learning to address it in a manner in which it is empowering and taking the person ahead. Address the emotion, not the person. And that empowers the person. Not by pep talk, but by experience and showing them the way. And good leaders do this because they themselves are very strong emotionally. How do we do this? Identify emotions. Like I told you, one should be aware of one's emotions so that he is not blinded by it. Aware of others' emotions helps to develop strong relationships. Understanding emotions, understanding point of view and handling teams' interactions helps in building framework of emotional intelligence. Managing emotions. One should be aware of individual emotions that have valuable information and their application to solve problems. Different strokes for different folks. Every person in the team is different in terms of emotional base. People are fighting their internal battles. We do not know that. They put up a smile. So an emotionally intelligent person will try to understand X as different from Y, as different from Z. And that's an important part of understanding people. Because each one's emotion towards the same job is different. So if I'm able to give the same job to three different people, delegating it to them, then I need to manage their emotions as well. Using emotional intelligence, almost 70% of problem solving happens in the mind. 70% of the problem solving happens in the mind. And around 30% through analytical techniques. If you think you can win, you will win. If you think you can't, because your brain is already decided. So one can use emotional intelligence to improve performance. Languaging a job from the emotional point of view is important to develop emotional intelligence. Languaging a job, languaging a particular occasion from the viewpoint of the emotion is important. That language one has to learn. How does emotional intelligence connect with career development? Here it is. Management development. Managers who focus only on technical skills do not manage well. Emotional intelligence enhances management skills. Team effectiveness. Teams are more than the sum of individual parts, and emotional intelligence can help to hold the teams together. This is called as the principle of synergy. In synergy, we say when one person is doing a task, he produces 100 units. If a second person comes in, he is also a person who individually produces 100 units. When both of them come together, 1 plus 1 is supposed to produce 200 units, but they usually produce more than 200. There is a comforting and a cushioning when two people come together. When three come together, more comforting and cushioning. This is one side of the story. There could also be the opposite. But right now, when we talk about emotional intelligence, we are saying that how when people come together, the emotions are absorbed. I'm inclined to talk at this point of time. A thought came to me. In a joint family, for that matter, in the Indian system, emotional intelligence is very high. That's what I've noticed. I'm sure many of you will agree. Whereas emotional intelligence, when the number of people are less, is not very high. So there are emotional upheavals and downfalls. So when you come together, there is always a raising of emotional intelligence. You must be together. Selection. Hiring decisions can be better informed through job analysis and an ability-based measure of emotional intelligence. When I'm hiring someone, we say hire attitudes. Hire attitudes. And while hiring attitudes, I also need to understand whether the person is emotionally intelligent. According to me, emotional intelligence has nothing to do with age. Let's not get an impression that people who are of a higher age bracket are emotionally intelligent. They need not be. Emotional intelligence can happen at any age. Any person who has gone through an emotional position in his life, critical, he or she has got an opportunity to become emotionally intelligent. Whether they become or not is their choice. I look at every emotional upheaval in life as an opportunity to grow emotionally intelligent. When you become emotionally intelligent, you are in a position to handle more number of people in life. Rather manage. Flexible planning. Managers who are emotionally intelligent can use emotions to adapt to their plans. These managers can change plans to meet the needs. They can adapt to situations. They consider various possible actions and alternate plans. Avoid doing the same thing. Avoid sticking to plan which is not working. In short, they are flexible. Now, flexibility doesn't mean that a person doesn't have a mind of his own. There are some section of people who say that once I take a decision, I stick to it. Good enough. And they are not flexible. A decision should be in a position to do good for the organization and for the people. If a decision is doing good for the organization and the people are going through all sorts of emotional upheavals, that decision will destroy the organization in the long run. So being flexible at the top level is important by sensing the emotional intelligence of people around. It's very important. So these people are usually flexible, in short. Motivation. Managers who are emotionally intelligent motivate their staff and themselves They get people to keep going. They get people to try again after failing. They allow people to take risks. In other words, they motivate others and self, and they get things done. Decision making. Managers who are emotionally intelligent make more constructive decisions. They use emotions to improve thinking. They don't react out of anger. They balance their thoughts and feelings. They don't let strong emotions blind them. They make good and solid decisions. As a matter of fact, decision making, which is again a chapter which you will be studying in Principles of Management, is all about collecting information about what I need to do. But at the point of taking a decision, all of you will agree, that particular point, emotion plays a very major role. And if you are a person with a good amount of emotional intelligence, I am sure you will agree that you are a better decision maker. The risk of taking a decision is mitigated, is brought down to a large extent if you are emotionally intelligent. That's what makes leaders apart from managers. Creative thinking. Creativity is basically connecting point A and point B through various ways. That's what is creativity. Doing things differently. People who are emotionally intelligent, think creatively to come with ideal solutions. View problems from multiple perspectives. Have new and creative ideas. They are innovative. They generate original ideas and solutions and seek new solutions. Socially, they are very effective, emotionally intelligent people. That means they are able to mix with people. They can accomplish goals. They are pleasant to work with. Good at influencing people, building consensus, believing in trusting and being empathetic with others. Job satisfaction. Now we discuss job satisfaction. It refers to the person's feeling of satisfaction on the job, which acts as motivation to work. As I mentioned earlier, job satisfaction is personal to the individual. It's my subjective emotion towards the job, subjective feeling towards the job that gives me job satisfaction based on my cognition. It relates to the total relationship between an individual and the employer. It is a feeling of attainment of any goal or objective. There are theories of job satisfaction which we are discussing now. The first one is fulfillment theory. It measures the satisfaction in terms of rewards a person receives or the extent to which his needs are satisfied. So under the fulfillment theory, we say that a person is said to be satisfied when he is fulfilled as far as his expectations are concerned. There is a direct relationship between job satisfaction and satisfaction of expected needs. It does not consider the individual's desire of his level of aspiration in this particular area. For a person who is struggling with money, he is taking up a job for the purpose of the package that he is getting. His job satisfaction will be governed by the fulfillment theory at that point of time in his life, in his career. As he progresses, he may go to the next one, discrepancy theory. When actual satisfaction derived is less than expected satisfaction, it results in dissatisfaction. So I am expecting my job to be joyful. And when I actually go and work, it's not as joyful. So there's a discrepancy in the level of satisfaction. So this could be one of the reasons why a person is leaving the job. He is satisfied because it's fulfilling. He is not satisfied because the discrepancy part of it is coming in. Equity theory. An individual's satisfaction is determined by his perceived equity. What he thinks, what he perceives. Equity means a sense of equal proportions, which in turn is determined by his input-output balance compared to others. There's a motivation theory which we'll be discussing in the motivation chapter, which talks about Adam's equity theory. And it's that theory we are discussing here. Input-output balance between A and B. Both of A should feel equal to B. Then he feels that I'm satisfied with the job. It's again your feeling, it's your perception. So input-output balance is a perceived ratio of what a person receives from his job relative to what he contributes. Input by A divided by reward received by A. Input by B divided by the reward received by B. This two ratios have to be seen as equal by A. Then he feels job satisfied. two-factor theory. This is again a motivation theory called as Herzberg's two-factor theory. Factors such as achievement, recognition, responsibility, etc. are satisfiers. Presence of satisfiers causes satisfaction, but absence does not cause dissatisfaction. Factors such as salary, working conditions, etc. are dissatisfiers. Absence of dissatisfiers causes dissatisfaction, and presence does not cause satisfaction. Two words have been jumbled upon. I'll explain to you in a simpler way. In this two-factor theory, which is called as Frederick Herzberg's two-factor theory. There are two terms which we need to understand. One is called as hygiene. It is said by Frederick Herzberg that people have to be first given a basic setting to feel comfortable. Right now I am in this room giving a video talk, a video lecture. So this room is having hygiene factors which will make me feel that I can deliver well. Basic lighting, some ventilation, some AC is on, and this is a basic hygiene factor. According to Frederick Herzberg, if this hygiene factor is taken care of, then and only then the motivation for the person will be there. So this basics that is given to me does not by itself satisfies me, but it's a setting. If the lights are switched off, if the AC is switched off, these hygiene factors, they start going away. Will I feel comfortable talking to you? No. So that is where I start feeling uncomfortable. Then my performance will come down. Right? So the presence of hygiene factors does not satisfy, but the absence dissatisfies. It will pull down my motivation. Now this is something which is the two-factor theory in a nutshell. More about it I'll be explaining when I come to the motivation chapter. Okay? Factors of job satisfaction, personal factors, age, gender, education, marital status, personal characteristics, family background, socio-economic background, from which part of society you come from, middle class, upper class, lower middle class, etc. Factors which are inherent to the job. The job itself can be a part of the job satisfaction. For example, people who love production. The production center is not a very glamorous place for people who don't love production. But people who love production, the job itself is highly satisfying for them. The work itself, the working conditions, influence of external and internal environment, and factors uncontrolled by the management, which are within me. Factors which I like to do, I like to work. Okay? Factors controlled by the management. They include nature of supervision. My job, I'm satisfied because of the factors which the management is offering. Nature of supervision, I may like it. It's to my liking. The job security is there, so I like to work there. Kind of work group that I'm moving with. The wages that are being paid to me, the emoluments or the compensation. The promotional opportunities, the transfer policies, etc. With this, my dear friends, I conclude this session. Wish you all the best. See you later for the next session.